Today, we're exploring the Sonoran Desert, which is one of the most diverse and misunderstood ecosystems of the earth. I will never forget the first time I was in Arizona and saw a saguaro cactus in person and experienced the feeling of being in the desert amidst the sand and the low humidity, constantly stressed about where my next drink would be coming from. But man, there is magic in the Sonoran Desert. And we are so lucky to be joined today by herbalist, maker, and desert explorer, Sonoran Rosie, whose deep love for the native plants of Arizona has blossomed into this beautiful line of sustainably foraged creations inspired by the Sonoran Desert. We're going to talk all about it, but she was sweet enough to send me a bundle of crisote for my shower. And it's so fascinating to smell these smells that I didn't grow up smelling, but to her are that symbolism of home. We talk about scent. We talk about plant magic. We talk about healing with plants. It's such a lovely conversation, and she's such a cool person. And it's fun to bring conversations like this to the podcast that are on such a specific ecoregion area of the world, which many of us probably haven't visited before. But we're plant people, and we love to learn about plants. So let's dive deep and learn about these fascinating plants with Sonoran Rosie. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants. Hi, Rosie. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you about these desert plants today because they're really foreign to me as I've lived on the East Coast in New York, and now I live in the tropics in Florida. Plants really fascinate me. So you have such an interesting area of expertise, Sonoran desert plants. How did you become the Sonoran Rosie? How did she evolve?
Well, I grew up in Arizona. I've lived here my whole life. I've always been into plants and gardening, and I just went out hiking all the time, and I learned all about the different plants that grow here around me in Tucson. And it was just a learning process, slowly just picking up all the different properties that all these plants have, all the edible plants that are, because there's so many edible plants here in the desert. And after that, I started learning from a local herbalist, and then started experimenting with using some of these desert plants to make like everyday creations, like lotions and body sprays and things like that, stuff that I looked for but couldn't find anywhere else. And then once I started making that, it just kind of took off from there. And that was 8 years ago. So I opened a shop after that, and it's been a long and wild ride, but it's been a lot really cool. I learned a lot over the last 8 years, and I love spending time in the desert, so it's been awesome.
I have been to Tucson multiple times because in my previous life, I was a musical theater performer, and I've been on multiple tours of Broadway shows. So I've sat in that theater at the University of Arizona in Tucson. Yeah. And so I've gone on a bunch of hikes in Tucson, and I can't believe, you know, I feel like there's a misunderstanding about the desert. You think the desert is this like barren, dry, literal tumbleweed wasteland. And then you get there and it is a really interesting ecosystem. Saguaro cactus. I mean, the first time I saw a saguaro cactus in real life was almost spiritual. Like, it's crazy to see these deserts full of them. Tell us a little bit about what makes the Sonoran Desert so unique.
Oh man, it's exactly like you're saying. People always think it's just like barren and dry. And there are some places like that in the Sonoran Desert, like parts outside of Phoenix and stuff like that. But Tucson, especially in southern Arizona, it is so green, and there's just so much diverse plant life, like you said, and very unique plant life, like the saguaro. It only grows here in the Sonoran Desert, and it's huge and definitely spiritual. Like, it just feels ancient.
Yes.
Yeah, it has four different biomes in the same area, which is the most found anywhere in the world. So it's crazy that all the world's biomes are found here.
Yeah. What are those biomes?
There's the temperate forest. So the sky islands that we have that are high up on the mountaintop, so super high elevation in the desert. And then there's grassland, which is way lower. It's like just tons of grass and different vines and things like that. And then there's chaparral, which is a little bit higher than the grasslands. And then it's got thorn scrub, which is trees. That's more like Tucson area. And desert, which is what everyone thinks of, like Phoenix there is super dry, super vast, lots of dirt. And then the riparian communities, which are the wetland areas near the rivers and streams and things like that.
Yeah, a couple of hikes that I went on in Tucson, I was blown away with the wild contrast of in one area, on one hike, there would be the sand with the, you know, saguaros and stuff. And then the minute you got close to a stream or a river or a body of water, like the vegetation totally changed.
Definitely. No, it's wild. I love going to different areas like that. The Santa Cruz River, the Gila River, all those areas. I love to share about them with other people because people just don't know that there's so much like life and water here in the desert when you go towards the water, but it's just so few and far between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What makes it, the Sonoran Desert has its own properties as compared to other deserts, right? What makes the Sonoran Desert the Sonoran Desert?
I guess the Sonoran Desert is just so unique because of all the cactus, I would say. Mm-hmm. The lack of rainfall that we get here in the desert, the extreme differences in different seasons. The summertime, we have tons of rain and water, and then we go to a super dry season in autumn, and then in the summer, the beginnings of the summer is always super dry too. So it just goes from like such extremes, and the plants have to adapt to survive that. So I think that's definitely what makes it unique.
Survival of the fittest. You know, all of our low maintenance, hardy house plants are desert plants. And it's interesting because when someone asks me how to care for a cacti or a succulent, it's give it a big, long drink, because that's how it gets, that's how it drinks in the desert, and then let it dry out, and then give it another big drink, like not little drinks every single day. So walk me through the seasons in the desert and actually what these plants face, like the variety in adversity, I guess, they have to overcome.
Yes. So I'll start with spring, because to me, that's like the first calendar season. We have it a little backwards in the way that we are in our society, but the springtime is super, like flowers everywhere. It's an amazing time to be there. It's my favorite time to be out and about because there's just so many different plants that come up because of the winter rains. And if we get enough winter rain, but there'll just be tons of flowers covering the ground, just fields of like California poppies, which people love to come see. Mm-hmm. And so the springtime is like definitely like the most joyous, bright season of the desert.
Mm-hmm. So springtime is when those California poppies, all of the wildflowers that we know and love, what are the like temps?
The temperatures are really nice. They're like 70s. High 70s. It's super easy to be outside. It gets colder at night. The temperature changes between night and day in the desert are so extreme. Like it'll be like a 30 degree difference between the daytime high and the nighttime low. And I think it's just because it's such a dry climate, there's not really many clouds to like keep the temperature more even. It's definitely extreme. But yeah, the 70s is like the best time. It's springtime's the best time to be in. Visiting the desert or living here for sure.
Yeah. So you have this beautiful period of bloom. And then what does the summer look like? I think that's the season everybody is scared of Arizona for.
That's what everyone's scared of. But I honestly love the summer because the beginning few months of summer is brutal and it's warm. But I love the heat. I'm such a desert rat. So to me, I like it because I get tired of the cold from the spring and the winter, which isn't very long here in the desert. But the summer first couple months are very hot. But then we start getting our monsoons. And that happens like July usually till about September. So that is just plenty of rainfall, tons of water. All the plants become alive. All the cactus swell up from being full with water. All the rivers are running. It's just beautiful. And then the sunsets are amazing. I mean, the temperatures will drop during monsoons at least 20 degrees. So it goes from like 105 to like 85 or 80. So it's definitely a relief.
Monsoons are very unique to your area of the country as well. Like, I've never seen a monsoon. We've seen hurricanes in Florida, but like monsoons feel very specific. What is it like being in a monsoon?
A monsoon is definitely specific. And I think it's just characterized by like an extreme change in weather where it just will be normal looking all day, no clouds. And then all of a sudden, like late afternoon, these big, dark, super dark rain clouds will start coming in really quickly, mm-hmm. and then it'll just dump a bunch of rain. So it's not like light rainfall like you get in other parts of the country. It's just tons of rain all at once, and then it's over just as quickly as it started. So it'll be like sometimes 15 minutes, sometimes 10 minutes, and then it's also like scattered throughout. So it's like one part of the town will get tons of rain, and the other will get none. So it's like super random and sporadic. It also has tons of wind, so it'll be super dusty sometimes or just chaotic, but then it's over pretty quickly.
And if the dust gets blown up with the wind, and does the rain settle the dust?
Yes, definitely. So the storms will kick up the dust in the beginning as the clouds are rolling in, and then it'll rain and dump it down, and then the dust will be gone.
So as I've read your lovely book, which is so beautiful, I love the illustrations. My book is illustrated too, so I have a soft spot for illustrated books. And also I have a couple of friends who lived in Tucson, and everybody talks about the scent after that monsoons have a scent, and it's the scent of a plant after the monsoon is over. Can you talk about that? Because I've never heard the name of or seen this plant before.
Yes. Yeah. So that plant is like one of the first plants I started working with because okay. I love that scent. And it's a creosote bush or chaparral, Laria tridentata. And it's a plant that it grows in the Mojave and the Chihuahuan Desert as well, but it is so prolific. It's all over the desert. And it's one of the first plants to come up, actually, when they like level the ground. But yeah, after it rains, it has so many oils on its leaves, it's super waxy. And once it rains, the oils are kind of released because of the water. And it'll just make the entire desert smell like this bush. And it's super like fresh and woody smelling. So it's not just like the regular scent of the rain when it rains here. It's like you smell creosote. Even if you have a creosote bush like in a neighborhood, like a street down, you'll still be able to smell it because it's just super strong.
I know. I want to know this smell. I was poking around on your website and I see that you sell creosote bundles the way I buy, you know, a eucalyptus bundle at Trader Joe's and I hang it upside down in my shower. You actually sell the bundles.
Yeah, that because it's so strong, it'll last for months too. Mm-hmm. So sustainably forage, like take a few from each plant and then we combine them into a bundle. And then, yeah, people hang them in their shower and they last for months because they're desert plants too. So they're super hardy and super potent.
You're an herbalist. I'm fascinated by herbalism. What are the medicinal properties of this plant in addition to the fact that it has a beautiful smell?
It is one of the most healing plants that I've like ever come across. And I feel like a lot of other herbalists say that for your skin. So to me, I always say that it can heal almost any skin issue. Rashes, bug bites, acne, super antibacterial and antifungal. So it just it's done like so many things that I've over the years of making lotions and salves and oils from it. People have used all these things for so many different things. And they always tell me like from like radiation burns to like acne again, psoriasis, sorry, eczema. It's an amazing plant. And I've used it myself for acne and it literally changed the way that I've felt about myself. That was one of the first oils that I make because everything I make, I kind of make for myself first. So it's an amazing plant.
So for acne, so you're making it into an oil and then you're putting that oil on your face, like as a moisturizer?
Yes. Yeah. A daily moisturizer. Cool. Yeah.
It smells like, and it's scented too, because it's got that nice smell.
Yes. It's got that desert rain scent. It's super, people love it. I mean, I love it. And I will use the spray at night because it helps reduce anxiety. Like it's been scientifically proven to reduce anxiety. So I'll use the spray at night to help me fall asleep.
When I meet listeners in the wild, one of the most commented things is that they come up to me and say, oh, I really want to get one of the wind chimes you're always talking about. Wind River wind chimes are the greatest wind chimes on the planet, and they would make the perfect gift this holiday season. My Wind River wind chimes have really underscored my life for the last couple of years, plant friends, and they have brought me so much joy and peace I can't even explain to you. Whenever I hear them singing throughout the day, I am reminded to come into the present and take a deep breath. It is so relaxing. It is such a mindful reminder, and it is also the most delightful accompaniment to all of my garden time. As we enter this gifting season, Wind River wind chimes make incredible gifts. You can engrave the wind sail on the wind chime with meaningful dates, names, or phrases. I recently got Mama Fiella one for her new backyard reno, and I know she's going to love it because she has been asking for a Wind River wind chime of her own ever since she visited my house and became enamored with the sounds. So gift yourself or your loved ones ongoing moments of peace with Wind River wind chimes. Use the code GROWINGJOY at checkout to get a free engraving on any engravable wind chime. So it's done for you and it's free. Head to windriverchimes.com to listen to all of your different melodious options. The chime underscoring this ad is the one I have. It's the Corinthian Bells 50-inch wind chime. And use code GROWINGJOY at windriverchimes.com for a free engraving to add a special element to your gift. That's code GROWINGJOY at windriverchimes.com. So tell it to me straight, plant friend. Have you ever been at the end of a summer, maybe this summer, and you looked at your garden harvest and you were like, how on earth do I preserve all of this? Or why did I grow 10 tomato plants? I don't need all of these tomatoes. There's no way I'm going to ever eat all of these tomatoes. Yeah, most gardeners have been there. And if you're curious about making your garden harvest last longer, you've got to check out this new book called The Preserver's Garden. It teaches you how to grow a garden with preservation in mind. So you're not thinking about the fresh harvest. You're actually thinking about harvesting and preserving to eat later in the season. It's a whole different game for growing food. It's an entirely different approach. And Stacy and Jeremy Hill of Gooseberry Bridge Farm walk you through in this book how to plan, plant, pick the right varieties that hold up beautifully in jars. The entire book is just dedicated to how to plan to grow food that preserves well. And not only do they help you select the types of food that you're going to grow, they break down the top 7 major preservation methods that you can then choose from based on your needs. They have fermenting, canning, dehydrating, and different methods are better for different crops. So you have in one book everything you need to preserve your whole garden. The book comes with both growing tips and preserving tips for a long list of plants. It's a practical, approachable book that will live on your bookshelf so you can always grab it and look up what you're preserving next. So go ahead and grab yourself a copy. It's called The Preserver's Garden. It's available anywhere books are sold by Stacy and Jeremy Hill. Once again, that's called The Preserver's Garden. Wow, that's so interesting. Let's stay high level before I want to go into a couple of plant profiles per season, but I want to walk through the seasons with you first. So you mentioned spring is in bloom, manageable temps, summer kind of, it sounds like, has two different seasons, the like super hot beginning of summer and then the monsoon season. And then What does fall look like?
Fall is definitely the drier season. So everything from the summer sort of starts drying up, all the new growth from the monsoon season will start to die off, and then we'll have it'll be very dry up until through winter, and then we get like late winter, we start getting some winter rain, and that so autumn is just kind of a season to kind of reset here in the desert.
Mm-hmm. And then winter?
And then and then winter is, it gets pretty cold, but not too cold. Probably it stays here in Tucson, at least like the highs are usually 50s. It stays pretty dry for the first part of winter. And then the last part of winter becomes like, most of the time, there are some years where it's a drought and we don't get much rain. For the most part, the last part of winter, we get light winter rains, kind of not the same as monsoons, but slow winter rain to kind of replenish the ground. And then that kind of starts the spring wildflowers sprouting.
Okay. So I recently moved from zone 5B to zone 10B. I'm completely disoriented. And the way that I'm orienting myself here is, when do you plant tomatoes? Because, you know, in zone 5B, I used to plant my tomatoes end of May, early June. In zone 10B, where I live now, I'm planting my tomatoes in October. So for you guys, when are you planting your tomatoes? When are you growing edibles?
I would say definitely October. Well, there's two different seasons. Mm-hmm. I would say October is definitely, because that's when it starts to cool down a little bit. Mm-hmm. All of my plants outside start to come back to life after being through the harsh summer heat. And just the sun is so much brighter during the summer. So I think it's just the plants. I've tried planting like simple things like rosemary during the summer, and it just will not survive. Yeah. But so there's October, and then there's also right after winter, right when it starts to get a little warmer. So right before, so basically all of spring. So you've got like two different seasons where you can plant edibles, but it's a short window. So you have to like make sure that you're like doing it at the right time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What zone are you in?
I'm not positive. I think it's 8, but I don't quote me on that. I'm not positive.
Okay, cool. I'd love to just nerd out and chat about some of these plants that my audience probably have not interacted with unless you live in this very specific area of the country. You know, one thing that I feel very fortunate about in my past life as a performer is I've been to almost all 50 states, and it blows my mind how widely diverse our climates are in one state. Like you could imagine, you would think, like myself as a New Yorker, the first time I went to Arizona, I felt like I was in a different country. I felt like I was on Mars. Like I felt like I was in a, and then you go to California and it's completely different. And then you go to Seattle and it's completely different. And then you go, you know, to the Midwest and it's totally different. It's just, it fascinates me. So, you know, you're in this subclimate that a lot of people probably haven't experienced before. So I thought it would be fun if we moved through the seasons and you share some of your favorite plants for each season. And since you're an herbalist, I'd love to learn a little bit about their medicinal properties too. And just learn about plants I've never heard of before. So why don't we start in the spring? So what's your favorite spring plant?
My favorite spring plant, I would say the saguaro cactus. That's the most 100%. Typical desert, especially in the spring when they start to bloom. Mm-hmm. They just look like underwater creatures. They're just so beautiful with like giant blooms, and they last pretty much for half the day. They'll start blooming at night, and then they'll bloom till about 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and then they close up and then open up again the next night. So they're amazing and so beautiful. They can live to be up to 200 years old. So they're just very ancient and huge. They're like, some of them can be up to like 50 feet tall. But they're just humongous, giant creatures, and they hold a lot of water inside. So like they expand to hold the water when it rains, and then they will shrink when it starts to dry up outside. So when there's less rain. And that's, I think, really interesting, because sometimes you'll see saguaros that are really skinny, and then sometimes you'll see some big, giant ones. So a variety.
Or if you have one in your yard, it's going to look different depending on how much rain you've had. And there are keystone species in Arizona, right?
Yes. Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what that means?
A keystone species is a plant that is vital to the environment. So the other plants wouldn't survive without it. And it's also protected. So like you can't just remove a saguaro because they're so unique to the area. I mean, they're really only in a small pocket, like around Phoenix, surrounding Phoenix and Tucson. So it's really not that big of an area that they live in, even though there's like thousands of them.
And how do they interact with the different animals, and why are they so integral? Yes.
Keystone species, because they produce, first of all, they produce blooms that for pollinators like bats and birds and butterflies, and those help pollinate the plants, which then help the fruits grow. And then the fruit is food for so many different wildlife, coyotes and tons of different types of birds, even like the bugs. Once they drop onto the ground, the bugs will eat them, and all of these animals and plants work together to maintain the environment. So when an environment is not doing well, the saguaros will definitely be an indicator of that. You can see that it's struggling or that it's just not, and that's usually due to like environmental issues that are caused by humans.
Got it. Also, their little homes, like one of the first times I saw saguaro, And it had like a, it had a hole in it. And there was a little woodpecker living in it.
I know. There's, yeah, those holes are made by the woodpeckers, and then other animals and other birds will take home in there and make their nests. And it's really cool to see and to capture one for sure.
So cute. What are some other of your favorite spring plants?
California poppies. Those are ones that so many people come to Arizona and California to come look at during the springtime, especially after a lot of winter rain. They'll just be covering entire hillsides just underneath all the normal desert plants that are always there, but they just, they cover the ground, and they're so delicate and so like beautiful. They just have such a contrast between the harsh cactus and then these like really soft, glittery orange flowers just everywhere. It's so beautiful. And they are also medicinal. They help, like if you can make a tincture out of them, and it helps reduce anxiety and promote relaxation. It's really
cool. How would you make a tincture? Out of the flower, out of the seeds?
Out of the flower petals. So you use like alcohol, some sort of alcohol. It depends. Some people use brandy, but you would put the flowers, the petals into the alcohol and let it extract. And then you can take like a small amount of that under your tongue or in some water. And then that helps with anxiety. It's super awesome. I love it. It's not like a super potent feeling. It's more gentle, like relaxation.
My best friend got married last year, and she had a blue, iconic, like sky blue wedding dress. And she had a bouquet of California poppies, and it was,
oh wow,
cool. The blue and orange combination was amazing.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was so
cool.
That's
so pretty.
And they're wild, right? So they self-seed, yeah. and they just thrive in that environment.
Yeah, that's what wildflower seeds can live underground for up to 10 years. So they'll just hide and wait until it's the right perfect conditions for them to come up. So it's really wild that we can go years without enough winter rain, and then all of a sudden they'll just be everywhere. And they produce a ton of seeds. So yeah, they can just spread out through an entire area. It's really pretty to see.
Wow. Gorgeous. Okay, so that's another plant that reduces anxiety and also makes you happy to look at. So that's spring. So let's talk about summer. So whatever thrives in the summer has to be pretty resilient because it's dealing with the high heat and the monsoon.
Definitely. I mean, that's the difference between spring wildflowers, is that they can only live for a short period of time, whereas all these other plants that survive from spring through for the whole year, they have to be very resilient and be well adapted to survive such drastic different extremes. Summer, we talked about it earlier, but creosote bush, it's actually one of the oldest living organisms. There's like it clones itself through its roots. So there's a king clone is what they call it in the Mojave Desert, that they've tested the root system to be 11,000 years old. So it's wild how ancient. Yeah. It's cool because it almost feels that way too. Like when working with the oils or like the sprays and stuff, it almost feels like very protective, ancient energy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, creosote bush. Another one would be velvet mesquite tree. So that is like our main desert tree it just spreads out so easily because it produces these giant seed pods, and it'll just spread out. Like I have mesquite growing in my yard just randomly all the time. So it's just a very prolific plant. It's a super thorny shrubby. It doesn't get too big, but sometimes they can be up to like 30 feet, depends. But they are, their seed pods are also edible. So you can use the outer layer of the seed pods to grind it into a flour that then you can use in all kinds of like baked goods. So mesquite flour.
Mesquite flour. And then what about the seeds themselves?
The seeds are a little too hard, so that they don't, when they're making the flour, they don't use the seeds, but you can just put those in the ground and they'll sprout up eventually.
Wow. So, okay. So from an herbalism standpoint, it's the flour that you're looking for.
The seed pod outer shell.
Right. For
the flower, yeah.
Yes, I said flower, F-L-O-W-E-R, not F-L-O-W-E-R. Very cool. And do you have another one for summer?
Yes, the Engelmann prickly pear cactus. So that is one that is another super prolific desert plant that grows all over the place. We have a couple different types of prickly pear cactus, but this one's like the main one, and it produces the most juicy edible fruits. And I'm sure a lot of people have heard of prickly pear fruit juice, but it is, it's wild.
Pear margarita. That's how I know it.
Definitely. But it's so, I just think it's really amazing how every season in the desert, especially in the summer, there's always something that will come up that helps people and animals survive that season. So because it's summertime, and after a few months of really hot heat, towards the late summer, that's when the fruit will start to ripen, and then you can start using it to create juices. Some people eat the fruit by itself after removing all the tiny glaucids, which are the little hair-like thorns that are covering them. Mm-hmm. And they're just, they have so many vitamins and electrolytes. I always forget, like, oh yeah, like I'll be like so lethargic and tired like during the summer, and then I'll drink prickly pear juice and I feel like so much better. A lot of people use it for hangovers too. It's hydrating.
So you'll just go to, you know, forage some prickly pear fruit and juice it.
Yeah. We sell a concentrate actually that people can buy, but it's a, I'll forage the fruits and then I'll freeze them during the whole year so that I can then make juice out of them whenever I need it or whenever customers would like some.
So when you're foraging for your business, because is all your business is all of these cool like salves and sprays and all sorts of things, are you foraging like 100% of the stuff that you're using?
No, not 100%, but it's like the main ingredient in the, in whatever we're making. But yeah, I tend to just use plants that I know are plentiful. There's other plants like desert lavender that are really would be amazing in like a lotion or an oil because that smells really good. It smells similar to regular lavender, but it's just not very common and I would feel wrong to use it. So creosote bush, prickly pear fruit, a lot of desert wildflowers like brittle bush we use. But yeah, I try to stick to the ones that have plenty to choose from.
Okay. So staying in your integrity and honorable harvest.
Yeah.
What about fall? What are your favorite fall plants?
One of them is fishhook barrel cactus. It's a big, round, short cactus that grows all over the desert. And it has these long spines that cover its whole body. Spines that help protect it from the heat, from animals being able to eat it. And these spines are hook shaped. So that's why they call it fishhook barrel cactus, but they bloom in the early autumn. And then they make these fruits that are big yellow, really kind of soury, but super mucilaginous, which is like a sticky kind of fruits. And almost, I don't know if you've ever tried a prickly pear cactus, like Nopalis, people make tacos out of it. It tastes kind of similar to that.
Okay.
But it's a little more sour, but it's really good in like pico de gallo, or I'll like to fry it up and like put it in tacos. It's super good, the outside of the fruit. And then the inside, the seeds are really small, almost like poppy seeds. So you can use them like poppy seeds as well. So they're pretty
baking or something?
Yes. Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. So how do you use that for herbalism? Do you use it in any of your products?
I don't use that one in my products, but I do forage it often, and I include in my book a recipe. The book has a mix of herbal remedies and recipes as well. So that one has a barrel cactus fruit pico de gallo recipe in there.
Yeah, love that. The barrel cactus to me are, when I look at them, I don't know how else to explain this, but it's like you believe in a higher power, like the geometry of barrel cacti it's so mesmerizing. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, how is this natural? Like, how is this not man-made? It's crazy.
It's so cool. There's so many different types too. And like at the Desert Museum, just outside of Tucson, they have a garden where it's just full of different types of barrel cactus. And I just was over there last week and I felt the same way. I was like, wow, it's just crazy how geometric they are and how the different shades, and then the way that the color is just on the thorns. Yeah. So it like almost like mesmerizing, because the color of the green cactus underneath with like the yellow thorns, or a different like orange. It's just crazy looking. It's very cool.
That desert museum is amazing. I've been there.
It really is. Yeah.
That's the one that has the hummingbird garden, right?
Yes. Yeah. The hummingbird garden. Tons of different desert wildlife.
Yeah.
If you're a plant lover, that's like one of the best places.
It was totally, it's like a little bit of a drive, right? But it's it's totally worth the drive. Also, the Phoenix Botanical Garden is totally worth the drive as well. I've been there too. Okay, do you got another fall plant for us?
Yes, jojoba. So a lot of people think jojoba is a tree, but it's actually a shrub. It looks like a small tree, but it is just a prolific desert plant that produces a nut that is edible, but also people create oil out of it. So it's almost like a macadamia nut or sunflower seed oil. They use the nut to extract oil from it. And that oil, it mimics your skin's natural oils. So that is super helpful. And that's the main oil I use in a lot of my herbal creations because it works so well together with other desert plants. And it just absorbs so easily and doesn't feel greasy. And it's just a highly nourishing oil. But also when I'm out like and about hiking, I'll just like eat a few of the nuts, like during certain times of the year when they're actually ripe and not too old, but they'll sit on the bush for like months and they'll still be okay to eat. But they taste like almonds. They're super tasty.
Really? I didn't know that. I've definitely seen jojoba in herbal essence. You know what I mean? Like in shampoos and in like body products, but I didn't know it was also edible. That's really cool.
Yeah. They don't recommend eating a ton of it because it just like anything else, it's like very medicinal. And so if you eat too much of it, it would kind of upset your stomach, but I've eaten plenty and not really felt anything bad from it.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And then what about the winter? The winter is, I guess, your dormant season. What if anything comes into bloom in the winter?
Nothing really blooms, but for the book, I kind of put more of the plants that are year round that are staples of the desert that way I could like make space for all of those, that don't really bloom too often. Like I have the Palmer's agave, which is an agave plant. They are known for tequila, making mezcal, agave syrup. You can make so much out of agave, but that's another one that just grows year round. And they only bloom like once every 10 to 25 years. And then once they bloom, this giant like asparagus-like stalk. Mm-hmm. Once they bloom that, then they die. So that's like their last hurrah, and then they'll spread their seeds. Or a lot of different types of agave will grow little puffs on the end of their stalk as well. But this one doesn't. It's just seeds.
Wow, that's cool. And are you making the mezcal, other things that agave is in? Are you making it from the flower that only comes once every 10 years? Or are you making
They use it. I don't make it because it kind of destroys the whole plant. And so I think agave is better harvested with agave farms because they're purposefully planted for that. But they make it from the heart of the agave. So they have to dig up the whole plant.
The whole plant.
Dig out the root. Yeah, the root system and then the heart of the actual plant. That's what they use to like ferment to make distilled spirits.
So cool. Anything else?
That's really interesting. The teddy bear choy. So that one is like a desert plant that so many people like fear because, well, there's other types of choya too, but teddy bear choya is like the most scary one because it's got the most spines all over it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a succulent cactus that can grow pretty tall, but it grows these little sectionals of arms and they're covered in these really sharp things that really hurt when you get one on you. And what happens is they break off from the plant. And they'll be all over the ground surrounding it. So if you're walking by, even if you think that you're not near the plant, it'll catch you like on your foot or on your shoe or on your pants. So you have to be like real careful. I always have tweezers because it's almost like no avoiding it sometimes out in the desert when you're hiking around that you might get one like in your shoe or accidentally brush into one. But they tend to like think that choya jumps at people and like that's like a myth that is here in the desert where like it's gonna like jump onto you, but really it's just because you brush up against it, but it has little tiny hooks at the end that'll just grab onto anything, which is why they can like propagate themselves so easily, because they can just head through the whole desert and just catch a ride on anything, really.
Mm. Wow, that's crazy. What's your favorite plant to work with as an herbalist?
I like to work with a plant called Brittlebush. I mean, I like to work with all of them, really, but Brittlebush is unique because it's a desert wildflower that blooms in the spring, but it tends to grow year round as well. But it's super fragrant, and Native Americans used to use like the stalks of it as like a toothbrush. So it's like got antimicrobial properties as well. And it's just so fragrant, and it's super hydrating too. So it's great for like a face mist, but it also has a really unique scent. It's almost like sagey smelling, but it's just very unique to the desert. And I love that.
Yeah, I love a planty entrepreneur, and I'm curious to know, how did your shop start? Like, what was your first product and how has it grown? And why did you choose to stay rooted in medicinal Sonoran plants?
The first product that I made that I was interested in making was a creosote body and room spray. So that desert rain scent, I wanted to capture that in something that I could wear every day.
Yeah,
because I had seen creosote salves other places, and I went about by trying to look for stuff like that first. And then I was like, well, I guess I can just learn how to make it myself. And that's kind of how I've always been, just kind of figuring, love to learn, love to experiment, figure out new things. And so, yeah, that was the first one that I made. And then it was, people really liked it. And then it just kind of went from there. But I worked out of my house for like many years. And then 3 years ago, I opened up my shop in downtown Tucson, where I sell my products. We have my workspace in the back. And then I also sell like other products from local makers, local artists that create jewelry, ceramics, and that kind of, I also sell some plants too that I propagate myself, and
that's
different
awesome.
Like native plants and also house plants too.
Tucson has quite the little art scene.
It definitely does. I mean, I think that's really what, like you asked, like what continued my drive for it. I just had became like so obsessed with learning more about the desert and desert plants. And I remember telling somebody, like, it feels like a romantic relationship. Like, I'm so excited to like learn more. I'm so excited to be outside and like find new plants I haven't seen before. And I still do that all the time. I mean, I spend at least 2 days a week out hiking and foraging, and I just can't not do that because I just love it so much. But yeah, the art scene, it really helped me grow because so many people are so willing to support small businesses and local businesses, and people that live in the desert love the desert. I mean, you have to if you live here. So
yeah, totally.
You don't have any other option.
Totally. Are there any Sonoran plants that we could have as houseplants?
Yeah, I mean, I was suspicious of it, but I had a saguaro seed kit. And I was reading more about it, and they were just saying that as long as it's dry and you keep it near a bright light and it's not too cold, then you can grow a saguaro and have it live inside your house in colder climates, which was wild to me. I was like, wow, I have always just grown plants that I know that will survive here, but I'm sure there's other ones like choyas and other succulents, like agave. Like, I've seen other people grow agave a lot of places. Prickly pear is super resilient. Like, it grows all over the world, different varieties. So
yeah,
there's a lot of different
ones. People use it in landscaping a lot. But
definitely.
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to try to grow a saguaro or a choya, you probably need to grow light. If you're going to do it indoors, probably grow light and light-handed on the watering.
Yeah.
If people want to learn more about Sonoran plants, you've written a beautiful book. Where can they find it? And also, where can they find you? Because I was poking around your website, Rosie, and I was like, I want that. Oh. I want that, you know, bundle for my shower. I want the room spray. I want the you like make all these botanical perfumes. You make really cool stuff. So where can everyone find
you? You can find me at sonoranrosie.store. I have my book available on there. I have all the different desert creations on there as well as some like local giftable items from other local makers on there as well. So sonoranrosie.store.
Yeah. And the book's name?
It is called Seasons of the Desert. Beautiful illustrations. I love how those turned out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll make sure we link to everything in the show notes. Thank you so much for opening our eyes to a very niche subsect of the plant world.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I loved this conversation with Rosie. Thank you for joining us, my new plant friend. Rosie very kindly sent me a Crisote bush bundle for my shower and also this delightful lip balm. I do have to say her lip balm, super hydrating, gives you a little tint of pink on your lips and has a really nice scent. But honestly, if you're curious about any of the plants, or maybe you did grow up in this area and you are familiar with these plants and you want to bring some of these plants to your home, she has a beautiful line of goods that she makes, like you've heard. So go support her, grab her book, Seasons of the Desert. And I hope this inspired you and introduced you to some new plants. And if you are someone from Arizona and you listen to this, I hope you just feel very seen. You probably know all the plants that we've talked about. But if you're an Arizonan listener, you listen to us talk about a lot of plants that you probably don't grow. So I hope this episode served you. So I think the summary of this episode, plant friends, is life can bloom even in the harshest places. And I want you to take that thought into your week as you continue to keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.